Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 5, Narada's Teachings to Vasudeva, text number 14.
Yetamevam vidyotanta
Dabda sattha
vibhavina Asundruyanti vishabdha Vechakaranti techakam
Anevam vidha,
anevam vidha,
not knowing these facts,
not knowing these facts.
Asanta,
asanta,
very impious,
very impious.
Sabdaha,
sabdaha,
presumptuous,
presumptuous.
Sat abhimanina,
sat abhimanina,
considering themselves saintly,
considering themselves saintly.
Pasun, animals,
animals.
Druyanti,
druyanti,
daiham,
daiham.
Vishabdaha,
Vishabdaha,
being innocently trusted.
Prachya,
Prachya, after leaving this present body.
After leaving this present body.
Adanti,
Adanti,
they eat.
They eat.
They,
those animals.
Cha,
and.
Tan,
Tan,
them.
Them.
Translation. Those sinful persons who are ignorant of actual religious principles, yet consider themselves to be completely pious, without compunction commit violence against innocent animals who are fully trusting in them. In their next life, such sinful persons will be eaten by the same creatures they have killed in this world. Before. In this verse we can clearly see that the great discrepancies in those persons who do not surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and His law. As stated in the Bhagavatam, those who do not accept the supremacy of the Supreme Lord gradually become infected with the most sinful propensities that bring, in their turn, terrible suffering upon the non-devotees. In the Western countries such as America, many people proudly proclaim themselves to be most pious religionists and sometimes even prophets or representatives of God. Boasting of their religiosity, such foolish people experience no fear or doubt in cruelly slaughtering innumerable animals in slaughterhouses or on hunting trips for their whimsical sense gratification. In the state of Mississippi, there are sometimes pig killing festivals in which entire families enjoy watching a pig cruelly butchered before their eyes. Similarly, a former president of the United States of Texas did not consider any social occasion complete without the slaughtering of a cow. Such persons mistakenly consider themselves to be perfectly observing the laws of God, and due to such arrogant foolishness, lose all touch with reality. When a man is raising an animal for slaughter, he feeds the animal nicely and encourages it to grow fat. Thus the animal gradually accepts its would-be killer as its protector and master. When the master finally approaches the helpless animal with a sharp knife or gun, the animal thinks, "Oh, my master is joking with me." Only at the last minute does the animal understand that the so-called master is death personified. It is clearly stated in Vedic literature that cruel masters who kill innocent animals will undoubtedly be killed in the next life by a similar process.
Mamsa vakshaita mukra yashamam sammihadmyaham itam mamsasya mamsatvam kavadanti manishinaha.
Quote, that creature whose flesh I am eating here and now will consume me in the next life. Thus meat is called mamsa, as described by learned authorities. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, this grisly fate of animal killers is described by Narada Muni to King Pachinabari, who was excessively killing animals in so-called sacrifices.
Bhobo prajapate rajam pasum pasha payadvare samgyapitam jiva sangyam nirjanena sahasra saha ite tvam sampatikshante smaranto vaisya samtaba samparitam maya kutai chitam yutita bhanyavaha.
O ruler of the citizens, my dear king, please see in the sky those animals which you have sacrificed without compassion and without mercy in the sacrificial arena. All these animals are awaiting your death so that they can avenge the injuries you have inflicted upon them. After you die, they will angrily pierce your body with iron horns. That's from the Bhagavatam, 4th canto, 25th chapter, verses 7 to 8. Such punishment of animal killers may take place under the jurisdiction of Yamaraj on the planet of the Lord of Death. In other words, one who kills an animal or eats meat undoubtedly acquires a debt to the living entity who has contributed his body for the satisfaction of the meat eater. The meat eater must pay his debt by contributing his own body to be consumed in the next life. Such payment of one's debt by offering one's own body to be eaten is confirmed in the Vedic literature. Those simple persons who are ignorant of actual religious principles yet consider themselves to be completely pious without compunction commit violence against innocent animals who are fully trusting in them. In their next lives, such sinful persons will be eaten by the same creatures they have killed in this world. On the news in the last couple of days, there is two young children in the country, I think, in New South Wales, and they were being babysat by a friend who had three dogs, big pit bull type dogs, and somehow the little children went out to play in the yard, and of course the dogs just attacked them, killing one, and another one is, I think the other one is alive, but its face and meat has been pulled off.
Very serious.
Very serious, very, very serious. Of course, the explanation is here. You know, somewhere in a previous life, these individuals have committed some atrocities against innocent animals, and in the next life, those innocent animals have their turn of relinquishing the debt that now, as innocent children, they suffer the same fate. Innocent, helpless, and nothing they can do. Some powerful beast comes and just, you know, for the satisfaction of the tongue, just rips the meat from the flesh like this. So there's, and of course, these are not isolated cases. So it describes here, of course, that on the planet of Yamaraj, Narada Muni showed King Pratinabhara that because of his so-called religious sacrifices of animals, that even he would have to suffer on the plane of Yamaraj, or in one way or another in the next life, so many animals were waiting for him to torture him, to bite him and pierce him, his body, in so many different ways. If one is very, very sinful, then one may actually have to go to the planet of Yamaraj and suffer for a long, long, long period of time, where there are some sinful activities committed. One may actually just come back to the Earth planet and suffer the reactions here, or one may do both. One may have to go see Yamaraj if one is particularly sinful and killing many, many innocent animals. One may have to go to the planet of Yamaraj, suffer for an incredibly long period of time, and then come back to the earthly planet and again continue that suffering over many, many lifetimes. We see there are many, many instances. There are cases of many cases of the hunter becoming the hunted. Different personalities who sometimes go into the forest shooting deer, and there have been several cases where while they've shot the deer and the deer is lying dead, and they start to skin the carcass and what have you, and a bear comes out of the wood deciding that that's meat is for me, and comes and in a couple of swipes rips the person to pieces and leaves them lying in a pool of blood, struggling for existence like that. So there are many, many circumstances like that. Of course, Srila Prabhupada points out that one way that these reactions, especially cow killing, comes out is the wholesale slaughter of war, where you see that innocent people are just, their bodies are just torn to shreds, ripped to pieces, in horrific ways. I remember one time when I was in Perth, we had there was a peace rally. Everyone was protesting, just like in the Middle East at the moment. There's big peace rallies, stop the war, stop the killing, like that. And at this peace rally, there were thousands and thousands of people come from Perth into the city, and we actually had in our book department thousands of these newspaper type pamphlets, which were which we'd had trouble distributing, and I decided this would be a good day to distribute it. So we actually we went out to the peace rally and we gave out thousands and thousands of these pamphlets. And very, very quickly, I said to the devotees, I want you to give out thousands of these pamphlets very quickly, and then we're going to disappear very quickly. Because the pamphlets actually describe one of the articles was the myth of the innocent citizen. Right? So it actually described that by slaughtering innocent animals, many different quotes from Srila Prabhupada, from Srimad Bhagavatam, that therefore the reaction would come in the form of wars. So therefore, if we actually want peace, if we actually want to stop war, we have to actually consider that we may not be so innocent. We have these peace rallies that we're innocent, we haven't done anything, like that. But it's a myth. We're actually guilty and we deserve to be slaughtered in war. That's the actual fact. So we gave out these pamphlets, and you could see people were sitting there and they were reading them because everyone thought they were Peace Magazine. Okay. So they just, you know, they're all, you know, you could see like thousands and thousands of people just sitting there reading them. All of a sudden it's like this, what? You know, they see this sort of anger and agitation. Oh, there's Hare Krishna, you know, they've done it again. But I got a little bit of anger, but it was, you know, it was a moment in time where they really had to hear that message, and they heard it. So on that one day, it was sort of probably, you know, it really sort of hit home in such a way. But, you know, people don't want to hear that. They actually become angry. You know, they don't want to hear that, you know, it's nobody's fault. Just like with these children that were, you know, one was killed by a dog and one was, severely mutilated. You know, everyone is saying it's nobody's fault. It's not the dog's fault, the children's fault, it's not the babysitter's fault, it's not the parents' fault. But that's not a fact. Someone is suffering for some fault. Actually, you know, for the parents to lose children like that, there is some fault in previous lifetimes. There is some karmic debt. For the children to be, die in such a savage way, there is some previous karmic debt. There is some fault there. And the Bhagavatam points out the fault, that slaughtering, violence to any creature on earth actually is, unless there is a specific bona fide reason, it should not be done. So there are some exceptions. So, for instance, Srila Prabhupada noted that when he was in Mayapur and his spiritual master was chanting, walking up and down the balcony as he used to do, chanting Hare Krishna, and then he saw a snake in the courtyard, and then he immediately called out, "Kill that snake!" At that, and so they came and they killed that snake. So Srila Prabhupada was a little shocked that, you know, here is this saintly person ordering, you know, the killing of another creature. When he questioned, he later heard the verse from the Vedic literatures that even saintly persons, are not averse to killing envious creatures. You know, those creatures which are literally will take, you know, the first opportunity to kill you for no reason at all. Then, you know, that, you know, you may kill such living entities. And in fact, Kshatriyas were given that service, that they would, you know, they would go hunting in the forest and, you know, not killing whimsically, but certainly trying to keep rogue wild animals that may be travelling, coming too close to the hermitages or what have you. They would keep the forest safe to some degree. So there are exceptions, but, and occasionally, that, as, you know, they may even eat the meat of those animals. Certainly the Brahmanas didn't eat the meat. But, there are different exceptions there in the Vedas, and also there are different sacrifices which are utilised in order to test the potency of the mantras and the Brahmanas for a sacrificial ceremony. But many of those things are not recommended in Kali Yuga because people take advantage of them. So there are some exceptions even within religious rites for certain persons. Killing of living entities, drinking of wine. You know, there are different Vedic injunctions for eating meat, having sex, you know, killing animals. These things are there. Under. But if what is being described here is that apart from those exceptions, if we take the opportunity to have illicit sex, kill animals, take intoxication without regulation, without restriction, then there will be a reaction. So there's some concessions, and with those concessions there is a minor reaction, some sort of reaction. But if we take those concessions and blatantly engage in those activities which are trying to be restricted or regulated, then there's very strong reactions. So, for instance, eating the meat. So, Srila Prabhupada would often describe that if people want to eat meat, they should eat animals which are, you know, not so valuable, like the cow. The cow is considered particularly valuable, actually, for the progress of human civilization according to religious principles. They're very, very valuable, and that's described in many different ways throughout the Vedic literatures. So to kill the cow is particularly sinful. If one wants to eat meat, better to eat other living entities under certain rules and regulations and restrictions and what have you. But if one wants to eat the cow, then wait till they die naturally. As Srila Prabhupada was saying, you know, they can come to our farms and we will give them the cow. If a cow dies and someone wants to eat it, they can actually even come to our farm and here, take the cow, eat it. We have no, there's no problem once the cow's died. But to kill the cow, to eat the meat, that is a different thing. And again, we see that there are concessions in the scriptures that under regular principles, strict and reducing the time, the amount of time in a year that people eat meat and the type of meat that they eat, all these things are there. If someone says, which for instance quite often people quote that, oh, Jesus ate, he fed the people fish, though there's no real record of him eating fish as far as we understand it, they say because Jesus fed people fish, therefore we'll eat anything, anytime, whatever we want. So, there may be some emergency situation, some, you know, there within the Bible, as there are in all scriptures, but that doesn't mean, because the main principle is, thou shalt not kill. That's the main principle. There are 10 commandments. One of them is not, thou shalt eat fish. Well, thou shalt kill cows and have it for lunch, you know, breakfast, dinner and tea. That's not the commandment. The commandment is thou shalt not kill. There are some concessions to those main principles. That's understood. So, but there is a blatant disregard that here is the restriction, thou shalt not kill, and a little exception that some people are, you know, hungry, going without, so some fish is made available. So therefore, that means that we will eat anything we want, whenever we want, without any consideration whatsoever. If, and this verse in the Bhagavad Gita, of course, is describing that if we have that mentality, there will be severe reaction. Even though one may be quoting scripture, one may be claiming to be a Christian or a Muslim or a Hindu or what have you, and they're saying, yes, it's there, we can see it in the scriptures, but according to the shastras, there is no, there is actually no justification, and one will have to suffer. One will have to suffer. It is like, for For instance, it is such a radical jump from a small concession that's available in the scripture to just doing anything you want. So somewhere there's a small concession in the scriptures to eat meat, therefore I'll eat any type of meat I want, even though it's, you know, the principle is thou shalt not kill. It's like saying, I have to earn some money. Okay, I'll become a prostitute. Right? I have to earn some money. You know, that's my duty to my family. I'll become a gigolo or a prostitute. That's the same mentality. Yes, you have to earn money. No one is denying that. Yes, there are concessions for eating meat. But that doesn't mean you go to the, you know, way over to the extreme and that's okay. Yes, you have to earn money. But to earn money by becoming a prostitute is going to the far, there's no need. One can become a clerk in a bank. You know, one can become a doctor or what have you. One does not have to, you know, go to such sinful means in order to earn, you know, one can become a doctor. One does not have to become so sinful in order to earn money. Right? In the same way, yes, if there's some concessions to eat meat, okay. That is there. But don't just go right to the extreme that killing, as described here, a former president of the United States from Texas did not consider any social occasion complete without the slaughtering of a cow. Right? So it's just going to the absolute extreme in the name, usually, of Christianity or some religion, when there's no need. There's no need for that. But if you question them, they will quote from the Bible, they will quote from all the different holy scriptures how it is sanctioned, because, you know, there is one little, you know, verse, something, and they will seize upon it. Aha! Right? It's just that's the nature of, especially in Kali Yuga. People so much want to commit sinful activity, and if they see the slightest little, you know, opening in religious scripture, they will just pounce upon it. Ah, it's there. It's there in the Bible. It's there in the Quran. You know, it's there in the Hindu scriptures. Actually, at one time, Srila Prabhupada was asked that, is it possible that people who, you know, he was saying that, you know, they're Christians and yet they're, you know, engaged in such sinful activity in the name of Christianity, how can they, you know, is it possible that they can actually be associates or servants of God? Which is a very interesting question. Because, you know, if you actually go to, if you take the statistics of, you know, who is purchasing most of the meat from the butchers, most of it's you Christians, and you atheists, and like this, you know, a couple of years ago, there was one statistic came out that the best customers, the most prominent customers, regular customers in the sex industry shops are the average middle class Christians. They purchase the most of the, you know, things from the sex shops, and there's a lot of wife swapping and what have you. Also, in the same group. Intoxication, you go to the liquor store, yeah, you take a survey of who your customers are, you'd be surprised. So, the question is, can such persons, they ask for a kalpa, can such persons actually be associates of God, servants of God? He gave a very good answer, was that actually, in our Krishna consciousness movement, we have many Christians, we have many Jewish people, we have Muslims, we have Hindus. So yes, of course they can be. Huh? Of course they can be, but it's a matter of understanding. So when a matter of understanding means if someone knows what God is, they will accept Krishna. Doesn't matter whether they are Hindu, Muslim, Christian, atheist, Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. If there is some sincerity to know God, and they have some understanding what God is, they will accept Krishna. Everyone knows God is great. How God is great? Then, you know, by wealth, by fame, by beauty, by knowledge, renunciation, strength. If one understands that God is the greatest in all opulences, then it's very easy for them to accept that Krishna is God. Therefore, you see, actually, around the world, the Hare Krishna movement is made up of so many Christians, Jews, Hindus and Muslims. Is that right? That's where they come from. So, of course, it's a question of understanding. Another question that they asked for the Prabhupada was that, well, actually, someone commented that someone should take the Bible and, you know, the Quran and what have you, and write a proper purport to all the verses. And Srila Prabhupada said, that's what we are doing. That's called the Krishna Consciousness Movement. So, and then someone, again, they asked Srila Prabhupada then, but, you know, if you ask a Christian, they will say, we have the Bible and ours is the only true religion. And you ask the Muslim and they say, we have the Quran and ours is the only true religion. And the same, you know, across the board. So then if we say the same thing, then we just seem to all be saying the same thing. So the answer that Prabhupada gave, of course, was that therefore you have to, the criteria is to test by the result. So, because anyone can say anything, yes, you know, my car is the best, okay? So let us, you know, race up the road at, you know, full pelt and see, you know, whose car goes the fastest and the longest and, you know, what have you, like that. So you test. Someone may say anything. Oh, I'm stronger than you, okay? There's one friend of mine who he used to do weightlifting, and he was a devotee. He used to do weightlifting. He had these huge, big biceps, and because I've never done weightlifting, I've played and done, and you know, always worked hard as a devotee. And he said he was stronger than me. So of course the only way was to test. I said, okay, we'll test. And so we had an arm wrestle, which, you know, was difficult, but I actually beat him. But he was shattered because he was a big man. But of course there's always someone stronger. That's what, you know, my father always taught me, no matter how strong you are, there's always someone stronger than you. And then there'll be someone stronger than that person, and there'll be someone stronger than that person, and ultimately the strongest person is Krishna. But you can test. You can test it. So anyone can say, you know, I am better than you, I am this, I am that. Anyone can say that, but it can actually be, it comes to a test. So, the test is ultimately how much love there is for God. And as Prabhupada pointed out, the first thing, to love God, you actually have to know something about God. Right? So first there has to be some knowledge of what God is. And if you discuss, just like one time I went to interfaith forum. So there was the leaders. Up in Geelong, but the leaders from Victoria of there was the Muslim, the Sikh, the Buddhist, people from different Christian sects like that. They were there, and I asked a question to all of them. Could anyone answer? And I said, "Is God on the spiritual platform? Is he a person, or do you think he only manifests personally in this world when he appears or speaks?" And across the board, they could not answer. These were the leaders, and none of them could say. They actually said, and they fumbled around with their words, and not one of them could actually say definitively, that we can't really say. We don't know. We don't know. Which was an honest answer, because it's, that is the general understanding. Now, if we don't even know that God is a person, and we're testing religion on the basis of how much love of God there is, that's how you test religion. Alright? That's not how many churches you have, not how many followers you have, but how your followers and leaders have some love of God. That's how you test. If we don't know that God is actually a person, then we have to question what sort of love there is. Because you can't love something that's not a person. So love means there's reciprocation between two persons. So even on the first principle, there is obviously some shaky ground for many, different. And of course, also if there is actual love for God, you'd also expect that the followers would be to the degree of love, to that degree they will follow the principles of God. Right? So, in this way, people can say, my religion is better than yours, what have you. People can say anything, but the test is how much love there is for God, and if there is love for God, one will have an understanding of God, one will have an understanding of God's injunctions, what he likes, what he dislikes. You imagine, is there a relationship anywhere based on love where you have a person has no consideration or no thought or no idea what the other person likes or dislikes? Where is the question of love or even relationship? We don't know what. If we, and we even on our platform, brothers, sisters, mothers, fathers, husband, wife. Imagine a husband-wife relationship, how long it will last. That they have no idea, they never even think about what the other person likes. They live together, and they don't care. I don't care what you like, I don't care what you dislike. I don't know, I don't want to know. How much love will be generated in that relationship? Similarly, if we claim to love God and we don't know what he likes, we don't know what he dislikes, or we don't care. So if the commandment comes down through God, thou shalt not kill, that is something that God dislikes. Godless dislikes the principle of unnecessary violence. As we said, for certain, there are certain concessions under certain situations which are acceptable even by God for certain persons. But blatant violence, especially in the name of religion, when there is no cause, is very much disliked by God. If we completely ignore that and we say, yes, but I love God, I don't care what he likes or dislikes, but I love him so much. I'll do as I please in this relationship, that I have so much love for God. So everything can be tested. The point of this verse, of course, is that at the time of death, even those persons who, in the name of religion, are actually committing violence, eating, slaughtering so many innocent animals, they actually will, whether they're Christian, Hindu, Muslim, or anything else, they actually will suffer. They will suffer a reaction. Just because one, you know, puts a label on oneself, I'm Christian, Muslim, Hindu, like that, does not mean, now I'm killing so many animals, at the end of my life, I will not suffer. Because I've got this label, it protects me. It's like an invisible force field. I can do any sinful activity, there'll be no reaction. It doesn't work like that. Therefore, we see in the Bhagavad Gita that the Bhagavad Gita actually gives 18 chapters of how to understand God, how to understand what the Supreme Lord likes us to do and what the Supreme Lord does not like us to do. He likes us not to do. These things are there described. And then understanding that, understanding God, understanding his likes and dislikes, that allows us the platform to take up love, which means we can surrender. So therefore at the end of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Sarvamam Parityagya Mamikam Saranam Vajaya Mamikam Saranam. He says that, now surrender unto me, give up all your different types of so-called religious activities under the name of so many, you know, so many so-called religious, you know, names and what have you. Give them all up and surrender unto me. So when one therefore Krishna gives education, how to understand God, how to understand his likes and his dislikes, and that allows us to actually, if one surrenders to that, accepts that, then that allows that loving relationship to begin. So Bhagavad Gita takes us to the beginning of love, the beginning of understanding, and the beginning of love of God. And then if for those who want to love God more, there's Srimad Bhagavatam. So you see here Srimad Bhagavatam giving so many, you know, chapters describing pure religious principles which are particularly pleasing to the Supreme Lord, where all cheating principles are kicked out and removed. Just pure, how to love God purely beyond any of the tinges of the material association with, you know, especially the lower modes of ignorance, passion, and even goodness. Pure love beyond any material consideration. And if one wants to raise one's love to an extremely intense platform, there is Chaitanya Charitamrita. And we see there how Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is teaching how we can develop the love of God to the degree that there is intense mood of separation and love from the Supreme Lord. So these things, these teachings are there. Bhagavad Gita is the beginning, Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita takes us right through, which is very, very intense. Again, so we can test. Not that all love of God is the same, so we may say. We can test, we say, well, everyone says we love God and our religion is the best. So then we question, well, some things that are going under the name of love are actually completely in violation of the laws of God. How can they be considered love at all? So we can, you know, so many things we disregard. This is not even religion. You call yourself a Hindu, a Christian, a Muslim, this, that or the other. Even in the Vaishnava sects, there are many Sahaja groups and Upper Sampradayas, those who actually can be quite demoniac, and yet they pose themselves even, you know, as Vaishnavas. But it can be tested that this is completely in violation of what God likes us to do and what He likes us not to do. Therefore, that cannot be categorized as love. Then we can take all the things which are acceptable. Yes, that is acceptable. That is a sign of love of God. For instance, Srila Prabhupada describes how, there are nine principles of bhakti, or love of God, the process of developing love for God: shravanam, kirtanam, vishnu smaranam, parisevanam, archanam, bandhanam, dasyam, sakyamam, navedanam. And we actually see that in all the various religions of the world. So you see that Prabhupada would say that, you know, the Christians, they are offering bandhanam, they are offering prayers, the Muslims, they are offering prayers, so they are engaged in bhakti. There's bhakti there. There is love. The real Christians, those who are actually following Christianity, those who are actually following the Muslim religion, or any of the religions of the world, which are bona fide, those principles of shravanam, kirtanam, vishnu smaranam, hearing about God, whether they're a Christian, or a Muslim, anything, or Hindu, if they're interested in hearing, chanting about God, remembering about God, remembering His instructions, serving His lotus feet, offering Him prayers, offering oneself as a servant, then there is no distinction. They're all Vaishnavas. To that degree, there is some Vaishnavism there, just like Srila Prabhupada would say, there is no difference between us and the Christians. We are Christians. We are Christians. We don't consider that we're different from the Christians. You can call us Christians or Christians. It's the same thing, because actually the word Krishna comes from, connected with Christos. Prabhupada said that he had a brother, a younger brother called Krishna, and they used to call him Krista. Krista, or Krishna, you can say, it's the same. And the Greek word for Christ comes from Krista. Krista, Krishna, it's the same word. It can be used interchangeably. And what is the name of God? Krishna. Krista, Christ, it is. Same. There is a similarity there. So, for those who are actually following the actual principles of Christ, or following the principles of Muhammad, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he considered that Muhammad, Jesus Christ, are Shaktivesh avatars. Just like we call Lord Buddha an avatar. So, Christ, Muhammad, Shaktivesh avatars. The bona fide devotees of the Lord, the acharyas, the mahajans. One devotee asked Srila Prabhupada that, we read in the Bhagavatam there are a list of 12 mahajans. We don't see Christ. And Prabhupada said, no, that's, you know, and then he gave the definition of Mahajan, one who is strictly following God, they're Mahajan. And so therefore Christ, and he gave a list, St. Thomas and this one, all, you know, the Christians have their Mahajans, and the Muslims have their Mahajans, and they're bona fide devotees of the Lord. And we accept their principles according to how it is suitable for our level of love for God. This is what is being described in this section, of course, that there are religious principles for people on the beginning of love of God, and there are religious where there are more concessions for sense gratification, and then there are religious principles or practices for those on a very elevated platform of love of God, where sense gratification is not even, you know, there's no interest in it, no concession needs to be made. One should, you know, follow the religious principles according to one's platform of elevation in bhakti for love of God. So, Srila Prabhupada was pointing out that they have their Mahajans, Muslims, the Christians, so they are bona fide, and to some degree we can see practices of bhakti. So, according to one's level of love for God, and Srimad Bhagavatam, it is described that for those who want to completely kick out all cheating principles of religion, all concessions that may be made for sense gratification, and at the same time practicing our love for God, it's all kicked out. All the concessions, all the cheating principles, all the materialistic motivations that may be there. For one who wants to be spotless in their love for the Supreme Lord, that is Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita. Okay. So we are very, very fortunate, of course, that to have the these teachings, these spotless teachings. And everything can be tested. But in order to test something, there must be knowledge of the different degrees of something. For instance, if you test gold, just like when I was in Bali, one time I was buying silver and gold, and but you never knew who was going to cheat you. And there was this Balinese boy who he gave me a little black stone. It looks a lot like a shalagram, but very smooth. And you can rub gold or silver, you rub it on the stone and it comes off with a streak. And you can see whether it's 80%, 90%, 95% or pure gold because of the brightness of the streak. Very easy to see that you rub them together. And you can have, if you rub them from different levels of gold, and you have the four or five lines there, then you can test everything according to that. So there is everything can be tested like that, but there has to be some understanding that there is pure gold. There has to be an understanding there is pure gold, what is pure gold, and then there is gold-plated, you know, metal. That understanding has to be there. If one just thinks, no, it's all gold, that is, like a child may not have that ability to distinguish. In the same way, love of God is there, but there are different degrees. There is pure, spotless love of God without any tinge of materialism, and then there is love of God which has a lot of, you know, materialistic motivations that's right at the beginning. So that understanding should be there, but quite often it's not. You know, generally if you speak on the platform of love of God, it's, you know, we love God, and there's no, you know, we don't want to discuss, we don't know anything about different degrees of love of God. We have love of God, you have love of God, that's it, end of story. Now, imagine you go into a fruit shop, And you know, there's bad apples, there's good apples. There's apples that taste sweet and they're crisp, beautiful, fresh. And you've got the other, you know, sort of apple all bruised and, you know, dry and worms in the middle. But they're all apples, you know. But a discerning person, even if they buy an apple, they understand there are differences. If they go in to buy a Walkman, you know, or a guitar, a car, a horse, anything, they'll test, oh, there's different degrees. When it comes to love of God, no, there's no difference. Right? It's all the same. And ours is the only one. But actually, there are degrees and they can be tested. And that's what Srila Prabhupada was saying. That yes, everyone can make some claim, but ultimately it can be tested. If you want to test it, you have to know what is pure love and what are the different degrees of material motivation. That information is only found in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And examples, samples of pure love of God is found in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself demonstrated and showed pure love for God, the intense mood of separation, how one acts, what he does and does not do on that platform. There's no, in his life, he left no doubt. So that imposters can't come and say, I have pure love of God, because the Lord himself set the standard. No. This is a sample of pure love of God. I'm giving it myself. Therefore, now you can understand what it is, you can see what it is, so therefore you can compare like that. And in the Bhagavatam, you see, Sanatana Goswami in his, actually his Brihat Bhagavatamrita, that he has very systematically written his book to describe all the different levels of devotees, from the beginning devotees right up to the topmost, of which we understand the gopis of Vrindavan are the topmost lovers of Krishna. So that is all described in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. So we have these scientific literatures which describe these things in great detail. So much information. Otherwise you cannot find it. You can find little snippets of information, but not the vast ocean of wealth that we have been given through the grace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and of course Srila Prabhupada. So in this way we should definitely feel very, very fortunate to be within the Krishna consciousness movement. And if we're discussing love of God, who is God, the principles of religion, we have all the information that anyone could possibly need in order to discuss it properly and actually test properly, you know, what is religion, what is God, what is love of God. These things can all be tested with this information. Generally you'll find others do not have that information and therefore they are misguided. But Prabhupada said, if they're sincere and they're really interested to know what God, ultimately they will accept Krishna. If they accept Krishna, they will accept Bhagavad Gita. If they accept Bhagavad Gita, they will accept Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay. And ultimately they will chant Hare Krishna. I'll leave it there if anyone has any questions or comments.
The first principle of us said, if we are not holy, once we know that, then it's very easy to understand all things.
Yes.
How we love God. And then we won't be bound in the material world at all.
That's a fact. That's a fact. And actually, it's a very good point. In order to know God, we understand we're not the body, and we try and understand our own spiritual nature. And in fact, if you listen to Srila Prabhupada's conversations, even with many of the great so-called philosophers and religionists of the world, many of them had a lot of difficulty just understanding that thing. Prabhupada, wherever he went, he would get his disciples to bring the greatest thinkers, you know, the scholars, the philosophers, the leaders of religion, and he would discuss with them on these principles, not the body, you know, no illicit sex, no gambling, and most of them had a lot of difficulty accepting these preliminary basic principles of Krishna consciousness.
And you said Prabhupada always wanted to talk to professors and academics because he thought that if they understand, they will at least teach to some people, I think neighbors and friends and all that.
Some of them did, of course, and as we said, they actually became and still are very prominent members of ISKCON and have helped their their leaders from the Jewish community, Muslim community, scientific community, Christian community, who are understanding principles of Srimad Bhagavatam. They're writing books, giving lectures, and helping the devotees and their fellow Christians, Jews, Hindus, scientists to understand the same principles. That's a fact. Some of them, amongst hundreds and hundreds of so-called great thinkers, there were actually a few amongst them who were actually sincere and actually intelligent. And they merely accepted. So, like you, you're a doctor. Yeah, medical man, scientific man, and I'm sure you are, you're a perfect example. It's very, for many doctors it would be very difficult for them to accept Krishna consciousness, but you're a good example yourself. Any other comments or questions? Yes.
This verse reminds me of a friend I have. She's on it. I always sort of consider her, quite quiet and she's Christian and sort of sad, but she still is me. Sort of difficult, quite close friends, and she helped me out and stuff like that.
There are some, as we said, there are amongst many Christians, Hindus, Muslims, they're practicing some aspects of bhakti, and to that degree they will be rewarded by the Supreme Lord and helped to rise above the sinful activity, the addiction to bad habits. To the degree that they're offering sincere prayers to the Lord, then ultimately, Krishna will sweep them up in the Sankirtan movement and help them to, avoid going to hell and suffering for killing of innocent animals. Sorry, I'll go to the program.